Welcome, my friends, to a new Digest episode from English Plus Podcast. I'm your host, Danny, and I'm excited to share with you the exciting things we're going to discuss in today's Digest. We have a lot to cover. Let me tell you first what we're going to cover in this episode, and then we're going to start right away. So, in our first section, Words of Wisdom, we're going to talk about why bad news runs a marathon. That's in our proverb. And then we're going to talk about hope, the superpower you didn't know you had. That's in our quote segment. Then we're going to move on to our word power section. We're going to talk about the expression in hot water and the word impervious. After that, we have our Q&A section. We're going to answer a very important question that I received from one of our listeners from India. And after that, we're going to move on to our Did You Know section. We're going to talk about Mozart, the musical prodigy, how for him, before words, there was music. And in our Know Yourself segment, we're going to talk about gratitude, your happiness superpower. After this section, we're going to move on to our English Plus magazine section. I know that we haven't included that in all our Digest episodes before, but I'm going to try to include that in every Digest episode to remind you that there is the English Plus magazine on the website, of course, and to share with you some of those exciting articles. Today, we're going to talk about superbugs versus superheroes and how we can battle antibiotic resistance. And then we're going to talk about fact or fiction, and this one has to do with booze and brains. Does alcohol really kill brain cells? Once we finish our English Plus magazine section, we're going to move on to our language focus. We're going to talk about ethics, and we're going to talk about some problems, some common mistakes we make using the present simple. In our final section for today, the literary echoes, we're going to talk about a very special poem by none other than Percy B. Shelley. And this poem is Ozymandias. And we're going to finish with our spotlight as usual. We're going to talk about fitting in, unpacking the power of social norms. Are you interested yet? We have a lot to cover. We have a lot of interesting things to talk about, so don't go anywhere because I'll be right back and we'll start right away with our Words of Wisdom section. Have you ever noticed how bad news seems to have wings? A rumor spreads like wildfire. A scandal makes headlines in the blink of an eye. A crisis situation somehow becomes everyone's business in minutes. Why is that? Why does misfortune spread so quickly? Does negativity just have a faster gear than good news? Well, let's explore that on today's episode of Daily Proverb. Welcome, my friends, to Daily Proverb, where we delve into those timeless nuggets of wisdom that have shaped cultures across the globe. Today, we're dissecting a saying you've definitely heard. Bad news travels fast. Is it true, though? Let's put this proverb to the test. Let's get a bit psychological for a moment. Humans are wired with something called a negativity bias. This means our brains are more attuned to danger, problems, and unpleasant things. It's a survival mechanism from way back when spotting the hungry lion was more important than appreciating the pretty flowers. This bias means we pay closer attention to bad news. We dwell on it. Another factor is plain old gossip. Let's be honest. Juicy misfortunes make for way more entertaining conversation than someone's new vegetable garden. Sharing a shocking story gives us a little thrill, a sense of being in the know. That desire, however innocent, makes bad news spread quickly. Well, think about the media. News outlets know we're fascinated by the negative. That's why headlines often scream about disasters, crime, and conflict. It grabs our attention, even if it paints a skewed picture of the world. Now, of course, sometimes bad news travels fast because it needs to. Warnings about a dangerous situation are essential. But what about the less urgent stuff? The rumor mill. The social media storm over a celebrity's misstep. That's where we need to be a bit more discerning. Remember, bad news often hijacks our attention. So before you click share on that next shocking story or start whispering the latest gossip, ask yourself, is that accurate? Does it need to be spread? Am I feeding into the cycle of negativity? The proverb bad news travels fast is a reminder to be mindful consumers of information. And I beg you, my friends, let's not give negativity a free ride. So that was our proverb for today. But of course, our words of wisdom is not done. We still have our quote for today. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Life's got a way of throwing curveballs, doesn't it? Disappointment hits, plans crumble, dreams feel out of reach. Sometimes it feels easier to give up, to let that little flicker of hope inside of us just fade away. But what if hope is tougher than we think? What if it's our secret weapon against hardship? Well, today we're diving into a powerful quote by Martin Luther King Jr. about disappointment and the unbreakable power of hope. Welcome, my friends, to our quote for today, where we unpack the wisdom of the world's greatest thinkers. Today, we're talking about a quote that's been a beacon for countless people facing adversity. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. What did MLK mean by this? Well, let's find out. Martin Luther King Jr. knew a thing or two about disappointment. Fighting for justice meant facing setbacks, betrayals, and unimaginable hardships. Yet he clung to hope. Not a naive, wishful thinking kind of hope, but a defiant, action-based hope. See, MLK understood that disappointment is part of being human. Mistakes happen. Things don't always go our way. The key, he's saying, is not to let those temporary setbacks define us. To not let them snuff out our belief in a better future. Infinite hope. Now that's powerful. It's the kind of hope that pushes us to get back after we fall, to keep striving even when the odds are stacked against us. It's a source of resilience. It's the fuel for change. Well, let's make this practical. You lost your job? Disappointing, for sure. Infinite hope fuels your search for a new, even better one. A relationship ended? Heartbreaking. Infinite hope allows you to heal and believe in future love. Infinite hope means believing that even with the disappointments, progress is possible, that our efforts do make a difference. So, my friends, think about a time when you felt crushed by disappointment. Did a flicker of hope remain? Could you imagine a way forward, even slightly? That's the infinite hope Martin Luther King Jr. talks about. Let's nurture it. So next time disappointment comes knocking, how can you answer while holding on infinite hope? Think about that, and maybe you can share your stories with me, and I would love to learn from your stories of resilience and hope, of course. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of our Words of Wisdom section, and next, we're going to move on to our Word Power section, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Imagine you're in a classic detective movie. Someone says, "The boss is in hot water. Big time. Yikes." Does that mean a relaxing bubble bath gone wrong, or is there more to the story? Why do we use the phrase "in hot water" to mean trouble? Let's crack this curious expression wide open on today's English Express. Welcome, my friends, to English Express, where we take a joyride through the wild world of English expressions. If you've ever wondered why we say the things we say, you're in the right place. Today, we're investigating the phrase "in hot water," so let's dive in. Now, picture this. Way back in the day, before fancy washing machines, people heated water in giant cauldrons. Now, if you were accused of a crime, one pretty horrible way to prove your innocence was the hot water ordeal. They'd make you dip your arm in boiling water. If it was badly burned, you were guilty. Ouch. Well, while thankfully this practice is no longer there, or at least is no longer legitimate, of course, the expression stuck. Being in hot water means being in serious trouble, in a mess of your own making, likely facing unpleasant consequences. For example, if you miss your best friend's wedding because you overslept, you're definitely in hot water. Or if you get caught copying someone else's homework, well, in hot water you go. It's important to note, in hot water isn't just for tiny mistakes. Companies can be in hot water for scandals. Politicians can be in hot water over broken promises. It means significant trouble. And now my question to you is, have you ever been in hot water? A little scrape or a full-blown disaster? Maybe you've seen a news story about someone in hot water. So next time you hear this phrase, remember the cauldrons of history and be grateful for modern-day justice. And of course, if you have any interesting stories, you can share those with me. And now, my friends, we're done with our expression for today. We'll move on to talk about our word for today, impervious, the word that means unbreakable. That's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Imagine a superhero whose power is absolute unbotherability. Nothing fazes them. Insults bounce off, criticism slides away. Bad news? They shrug it off. Is that a useful power? Is it even possible? Well, the English word impervious comes pretty close. Well, let's explore what impervious really means in our Word of the Day segment. Welcome, my friends, to Word of the Day, where we take a single word and give it the star treatment. Today, we're putting impervious under the microscope. Get ready to discover its meanings and all the quirky ways we use it. Impervious comes from Latin roots, meaning not allowing something to pass through. Think of a raincoat that's impervious to water. Rain bounces right off. Well, that's the literal meaning. But here's where it gets fun. We use impervious for things beyond raincoats. A person can be impervious to criticism, meaning hurtful words just don't affect them. Someone might be impervious to flattery, not swayed by empty compliments. You might even say that fortress is impervious to attack. Well, sometimes it sounds a bit negative. When someone's impervious to reason, it means no logic will change their mind. So while it sounds cool to be impervious to insults, there's a fine line between that and being closed-minded. So my friends, are you someone who lets things get to you easily? Or do you have a bit of an impervious streak? Is there a situation where being more impervious might be useful? On the other hand, are there times when it's important to let ourselves be affected, to stay open and vulnerable? Well, it's a balancing act. Think about it. And of course, as usual, if you have anything to share, please share them with me. I would love to learn from you. And of course, have a discussion with you. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of our Word Power section. And next, we have a very special question from our friend Anika Rao from Bangalore, India. And trust me, this is not her question alone. Many of you must have asked this question once or still asking it. So stick around because we're going to talk about this question next. I'll be right back. Welcome back, my friends, to our Q&A section for today. We have a question from our friend Anika Rao from Bangalore, India. Now, as I told you earlier, you can send your questions to ask@englishpluspodcast.com and it will be featured in one of the upcoming episodes. And of course, you can share some information about yourself so that everyone gets to know you a little bit better. So, about our friend Anika, she works as a software engineer and she wants to enhance her communication skills for international projects. She's looking for English resources to boost her pronunciation confidence. Her question was, I get nervous when speaking English with native speakers. How can I overcome this anxiety? Well, of course, a special shout out to Anika from Bangalore, India, and to all our friends and listeners from India. Well, Anika, you've got a great question that resonates with so many of us out there. Feeling nervous about speaking English with native speakers is absolutely normal, especially in a professional context like yours. Well, let's tackle that anxiety together and get you feeling confident on global projects. Well, first, let's give your nervousness a big old hug. It's your brain's way of saying, hey, this situation is important. Often, we are worried about making mistakes or being judged for our accents. Well, guess what? Native speakers make mistakes too. And accents are awesome. They tell your story. So let me focus a little bit on how to overcome the nerves. Accents are a little bit overrated. Of course, it's always a good idea to strive to have perfect accent or perfect pronunciation, I will have to say, because we need to be understood. But don't worry that much about the accent. But however, I will give you some pointers to overcome your nerves and work on your accent. My first tip is to mimic the music. Now, English has a rhythm and flow. Now, listen to podcasts, of course, to English Plus Podcasts and other good podcasts are out there, of course. Watch movies, your favorite shows, and try to mimic the tune of the language. Your pronunciation will improve significantly, and this whole thing is surprisingly fun. And next, and my second tip to you is to buddy up. Practice with a supportive friend, a kind colleague, or an online language exchange partner. Start casual, have a laugh, and let those words flow. And I know that you might be worried about the ums and ahs. Well, don't. Embrace the ums and ahs. Everyone uses filler words. Now focus on getting your message across rather than perfect vocabulary. You'll naturally polish your speech over time. Don't worry about that. And you can give yourself a positive pep talk. Before an important meeting, tell yourself, "I've got this. My ideas are valuable, and my English is improving every day. And I can get my message across. No question about that." Tell yourself this, it will definitely boost your confidence. Now, you might think that this is silly, yeah, this technique is something that we only see in movies and in those overrated motivational speakers' speeches, but it works. It definitely works. Well, these were some pointers, and I'm pretty sure that you have some good ideas on your own, of course. But these are my ideas, but I want you not just to be a robot and do these things. I want you to be human. I want you to celebrate your progress. Notice the small wins. Did you understand a tricky question? Did you use a new idiom correctly? Well, pat yourself on the back. This stuff really matters. And remember, my friend, software engineers are superheroes of logic and problem solving. That shines through any language barrier. Keep working on your English, but don't let it overshadow your incredible skills. And there's a bonus tip for you since you're a software engineer. Well, many professional fields have specialized vocabulary. Well, check out tech podcasts in English. You'll pick up jargon while boosting your confidence. And finally, Anika and everyone listening, be kind to yourself. Language learning is a journey, not a race. You're taking brave steps to expand your world, and that's something to be proud of. So I hope this helps, and definitely let me know if you'd like more tips or resources because we're in this together. So again, a shout out to Anika and to all our listeners in Bangalore, India, and in all of India. I know that I have a lot of listeners there. A big shout out to you guys. Thank you very much for listening to English Plus Podcast. And I hope that together with our podcast, you will take your English and knowledge to the next level. And now, my friends, we're done with our Q&A section. Don't forget, if you have any questions that you would like to ask me, just send them to ask@englishpluspodcast.com and let me know a little bit about yourself so that everyone knows who's asking. But I will need to remind you not to share anything sensitive about yourself. Anyway, even if you send me that, I'm not going to share it on the podcast. And about the questions, well, I must say that I haven't answered some of the questions because they might be too personal. You can ask personal questions about the podcast, about our production, but not about me. Well, since this is not a personal podcast about me, I'm not going to answer those questions. But again, any other questions you have about the podcast, about my process, about English, or any of the topics that I discuss on the podcast, you're free to ask. I would love to answer you, and I would love to learn more about you, of course, so let me know about yourself, and I will share that with everyone listening to the podcast. With that being said, let's move on to our Did You Know section. We're going to talk about Mozart, the musical prodigy, for whom music came before words. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Well, think about your earliest memories. Scribble drawings, first wobbly steps. Imagine if, instead, your earliest memories were of melodies, harmonies, the exact feeling a musical note gives you. Believe it or not, that might describe the world of a young Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Did Mozart really master music before mastering words? Well, let's find out on today's Did You Know segment. Welcome to Did You Know, my friends, where we take those wait, really, facts and explore the fascinating stories behind them. Today, we're time traveling back to the world of one of history's most incredible musical geniuses. Well, buckle up, because this story is about to blow your mind. Mozart was, without a doubt, a child prodigy. By age 3, he was picking out tunes on the harpsichord. At 5, he was composing his own pieces. And here's the wild part. It seems music came to him more naturally than speaking or writing. Biographers tell stories of Mozart scribbling musical notes before he could form letters. His father, Leopold, himself a musician, was astounded. He meticulously documented Mozart's early compositions, preserving them for the world. Now, it gets even cooler. It wasn't just playing existing music. little Mozart was inventing his own. These weren't nursery rhymes either, but complex pieces that showed a deep understanding of melody and how instruments work together. Now, how's that even possible? Scientists are still fascinated by Mozart's brain. Some theorize musical minds develop slightly differently. It's like he spoke music as his first language. So my friends, Mozart's story challenges us, doesn't it? It makes you wonder, what hidden talents might we all have, just waiting to be unlocked? What did you do effortlessly as a kid before the adult world told you what was realistic? Maybe it's time to tap into that childlike wonder again, because believe me, if you can tap into that, you're tapping into a gold mine. And I'm not talking about money here, of course. I'm talking about gold mine that will give you happiness for 1,000 years to come. So my friends, I hope you all awaken the Mozarts inside you. Of course, not necessarily in music, anything. Just anything you know you're so good at. Don't let that slip away. Don't let reality tell you that you can't do it anymore, that this is not realistic. Forget about it. Don't forget about that. Well, I must say that to myself as well, but you see, we're all in it together. That's what I meant when I said we're all in it together. I help you, you help me. I'm not gonna continue so it sounds like Barney's song, but you get the picture. Now, anyway, that was our Did You Know About Mozart. Next, we're going to learn something more about ourselves in our Know Yourself segment, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Well, think about your happiest moments. What comes to mind? Big achievements? Time with loved ones? Now, what if I told you there's a simple, everyday practice that could make those happy moments even more frequent? No magic potions, just a shift in how you view the world. Could gratitude be the key to unlocking a happier you? Let's find out together on Know Yourself. Welcome, my friends, to Know Yourself, where we explore tools and techniques for personal growth and better living. Today, we're diving into the surprising power of gratitude. It sounds simple, but could being more thankful really transform your life? Well, let's dig in. Well, first, let's start with science. Science agrees. Gratitude works. Studies show that people who practice gratitude experience a whole range of benefits. They report higher happiness levels, stronger relationships, even improved physical health. Why does this happen? Well, gratitude trains your brain. Instead of focusing on what's missing or going wrong, you start noticing the good stuff. This rewires your thinking patterns. You become better at seeing the positive even during tough times. Another benefit? Gratitude makes you nicer. When you feel grateful for someone's kindness, you're more likely to be kind towards others. This creates a ripple effect of positive vibes. How do you make gratitude a habit? Well, one popular method is a gratitude journal. Each day, write down 3 things, big or small, that you're thankful for. You can also try gratitude meditations. Send thank you notes to loved ones, or just pause during your day to really appreciate a beautiful sunset or a delicious meal. So my friends, what's one thing you feel grateful for right now, in this present moment? Hold on to that feeling. Could a touch of gratitude become part of your daily routine? Imagine how your perspective, your mood, and even your relationships might shift with that simple but powerful practice. Well, as for me right now, I'm grateful that you're listening to me, that you're still listening to this episode, and that you come back for more. I'm so grateful for that. It's a gift. And if you think about it, not so many people get heard in this world. And I'm very grateful that I am heard by you. So thank you very much, my friends. No matter where you are in the world, I'm so grateful for the time you're putting to listen to my podcast. And now, my friends, we're done with this part. We're done with our Did You Know section. And next, we're going to move on to English Plus Magazine section. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. We're going to have a battle. Superbugs versus superheroes. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever thought about a world where a simple cut could become life-threatening? Where common infections could be untreatable? Well, it's not a scene from a post-apocalyptic movie. That's the frightening reality we might be facing thanks to antibiotic resistance. So how do we turn the tide? Can we win this battle against superbugs? Well, let's dive in and find out. Welcome, my friends, to English Plus Magazine section, where we uncover fascinating facts and explore the world together. And I should remind you here that the articles I choose are just a taste, a simple taste of what you're going to find on EnglishPlusPodcast.com, on my website. There are hundreds of articles out there, and I'm pretty sure that you will find something to your liking. So just go to my website and find a treasure trove of information in our English Plus magazine. But let's get back to our superbugs. Today, we're tackling a serious threat to our health, antibiotic resistance. Well, we often think of antibiotics as miracle drugs. They've saved countless lives and revolutionized medicine. But like any superpower, overuse leads to a villain's rise. Bacteria are developing ways to fight back, leaving us vulnerable to infections that were once easily defeated. So what exactly is antibiotic resistance? Well, simply put, it's when bacteria become too smart for our antibiotics. They learn to resist the drugs designed to kill them, creating those scary superbugs. How does this happen? Well, sometimes we don't finish a full course of antibiotics, allowing a few bacteria to survive and gain new defenses. Additionally, overusing antibiotics in agriculture and healthcare fuels this resistance. These resistant bacteria can linger everywhere: hospitals, farms, even our food. The consequences of antibiotic resistance are severe. Ordinary procedures like surgery, chemotherapy, or even a simple tooth extraction become high risk. Imagine every infection becoming potentially deadly. But fear not, there is hope. We can become antibiotic superheroes. And here's how. First, remember that only when necessary. Take antibiotics only when your doctor prescribes them, not for viruses like the flu or a cold. And finish the course. Even if you start feeling better, take the full course of antibiotics as directed. This ensures you wipe out as many bacteria as possible, reducing the chance of resistance. And say no to sharing. Well, your friend's leftover antibiotics won't magically cure your different condition. Only take medicine prescribed to you specifically. And of course, you can become a hygiene hero. Wash your hands often and properly to prevent infection in the first place. And support science. Research into new antibiotics and alternative treatments is our long-term weapon against resistance. So my friends, the battle against antibiotic resistance isn't something only scientists and doctors fight. Every single one of us plays a role. Think of it this way. The next time you have a choice, will you be the antibiotic superhero or the one accidentally creating the next superbug? The power is in your hands. Let me know your thoughts on the fight against antibiotic resistance and what actions you choose to take. Until next time, keep learning, my friends, and stay curious, but don't go anywhere because next, we're going to talk about something fascinating as well. And this one is taken from my fact or fiction series, Booze and Brains. Does alcohol really kill brain cells? Is that fact or fiction? You'll find out next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Shots fired. We've all heard the warnings, drink too much and you'll fry those precious brain cells. But is this a hangover scare tactic or a scientific truth? Does alcohol truly turn your brain into Swiss cheese? Well, get ready to separate fact from blurry fiction as we dive into the boozy world of brain cells. Welcome, my friends, to Fact or Fiction, where we love to bust myths and uncover surprising truths. And today we're tackling a burning question. Can a night on the town actually make you, well, less smart? Let's be honest. Those blurry-eyed warnings about losing brain cells with every sip can be pretty scary. But here's the twist. Alcohol doesn't actually send your brain cells to an early grave. It's more of a sneaky saboteur than a mass murderer. So what does it do? Well, first of all, shrinkage. Alcohol can shrink your brain temporarily. But don't worry, it mostly plumps back up when you sober up. And then we have dendrites in distress. Those branch-like connections between brain cells are called dendrites. Well, alcohol can damage them, making communication between your neurons a bit like a glitchy phone call. And of course, it slows you down. Well, booze dampens your brain's signaling system, which is why those reflexes slow down, making you clumsy and your thinking fuzzy. And of course, there's the memory mayhem. Alcohol messes with your ability to form new memories, hence those blackout nights. Well, long term, super heavy alcohol abuse can cause permanent brain damage, of course. But it's the way alcohol messes with your existing brain power that's more concerning for most of us. And here's the good news. Cutting back and letting your brain recover can bring back much of that sharpness. So next time you hear that old brain cell murder story, remember the truth is a bit more nuanced. It's not exactly like that. And here, of course, I have to focus on a very important idea. Does that mean it's a license to drink without consequences? Absolutely not. Alcohol has a host of other nasty effects on our bodies. But now, at least you can ditch the boogeyman of disappearing brain cells and focus on the very real impacts of overdoing it. Let me know, my friends, did this change how you view the impact of alcohol on your thinking? Hit me up with your thoughts, and until next time, stay curious and question those common myths. Sometimes it's completely wrong, and sometimes it's not wrong or right, but it's more nuanced than a simple booze kills brain cells. Well, this is not exactly what it is. And when you start thinking this way, you improve your critical thinking skills. And that's definitely helpful in a variety of aspects of our lives. But anyway, that's the second article in our English Plus magazine that I'm sharing with you. Remember, I can't share all the articles in our episodes because there are just too many. So you should go to our EnglishPlusPodcast.com website and explore more and see for yourself. And with that being said, let's move on to our language focus section that's coming next. We're going to talk about ethic versus ethics. That's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever stared at the words ethic and ethics and thought, what's the actual difference? Or maybe you've used ethical to describe something and wondered if you were using it correctly. Well, if so, you're not alone. Those words have us all scratching our heads sometimes. Let's untangle the world of ethics on today's segment of English Usage. Welcome, my friends, to English Usage, where we clear up those confusing grammar mysteries and explore the fascinating ways we use language. If you've ever stumbled over a tricky word choice, this is the podcast for you. Today, we're clarifying the sometimes fuzzy world of ethic, ethics, and ethical. Well, let's start with ethic. An ethic is a guiding principle, a standard of right and wrong that shapes an individual's or a group's actions. You might talk about a doctor's medical ethics or discuss the work ethic of a particular company. So what's ethics then? Well, think of it as the umbrella term. Ethics is the broader study of moral philosophy, the field that analyzes and explores concepts like good and evil, justice and responsibility, etc. Well, ethical is our adjective, describing something that aligns with moral principles. An ethical decision is one that is considered right and good. An ethical company acts with integrity and fairness. So let's bring this to life with examples. She questioned the ethics of the experiment. And here we're talking about the moral philosophy. His business practices were highly ethical. That means morally good. Or we can say the strong work ethic of the team led them to success. And here we mean the guiding principle. So, my friends, next time you're writing or speaking, take a second to consider. Do I mean a specific principle, ethic, the broader philosophical study, ethics, or am I describing something as morally right, ethical? Choosing the right word sharpens your message. I hope that was useful, but of course, we're not done with our language section for today. We still have some problems to fix with present simple. That's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Do you ever finish a sentence and think, did that sound quite right? If you're a language learner, that little niggle of doubt might happen often. Today, we're zeroing in on those pesky mistakes that creep into our everyday speech. Could you be making sneaky errors with something as basic as the present simple tense? Well, let's find out together. Welcome, my friends, to Common Mistakes in English, where I try to help you polish those language skills and avoid those embarrassing grammar blunders. But today, we're tackling the present simple. Well, seems easy enough, right? Well, believe it or not, even native speakers mess this one up. So pay attention. One biggie is forgetting that S. We use present simple for facts and habits, like the earth orbits the sun, I brush my teeth twice a day. But when it's he, she, or it doing the action, you've got to add an S to the verb. And we hear a lot of people saying she work at the library. Well, actually, she works at the library. There's this S. So remember to add this S when he, she, or it is doing the action. Another common slip-up is with questions. Now, remember we use do or does to ask questions in the present simple. Now, sometimes people just forget to add do or does. They say, what time opens the store? Well, we can't say that. It's a question. We say, what time does the store open? And finally, watch out for adverbs of frequency. Words like always, never, usually. Well, these buddies love to cuddle up next to the verb in present simple sentences. A common mistake here is to say, I never am late for work. Well, we don't do that. We say, I am never late for work. Well, you might be tricked by how it works with other verbs, because we usually say, I never do this, I never do that. So, yeah, I use never before the verb. But not with verb to be, unfortunately. With verb to be, you have to use it after. So, yes, they stick together, but you have to be careful where to put them, before or after. Well, of course, most of the time, it's just before the verb, but pay attention. Some verbs, it's not the case, especially like our verb to be here. Now, why are these mistakes so common? Well, often it's because we speak quickly and our brains go on autopilot. Sometimes we're even trying to sound more casual and accidentally leave out important bits of grammar. So what I want you to do is to listen to yourself carefully this week. Do you catch yourself slipping up with the present simple? A little focused attention can go a long way in mastering this foundational tense. You can do it, it's very easy, but you need a little bit extra attention. So do it this week. Just make it your grammar goal for this week. And with that, we come to the end of our language focus section. We're moving on to the last section of today's episode, my favorite, Literary Echoes. We're going to talk about a masterpiece written by Percy B. Shelley, and it's called Ozymandias. Don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. Imagine a colossal statue, once awe-inspiring, now shattered, and half buried in the desert sand. Who built this monument? What mighty ruler did it honor? And what does this ruin say about the unstoppable march of time? Well, today we unravel the mysteries of Ozymandias, a haunting poem by Percy B. Shelley. Welcome to our poetry segment, my friends, where we delve into the power and beauty of the written word. Today we journey back in time to explore a poem that echoes with the futility of earthly power and the enduring force of nature. But first, let me share this poem with you, and then we'll talk a little about it. Ozymandias by Percy B. Shelley. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on those lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal those words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, you mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. A very powerful poem indeed. Let's dissect it a little bit. Well, this poem tells the story of a traveler who encounters a shattered statue in the desert. A pedestal inscription proclaims the might of Ozymandias, once a king of kings. But now, his empire is dust. The statue crumbles. Its boastful words mocked by the desolate landscape. Shelley uses this image to critique tyranny and pride. Ozymandias thought himself invincible, his legacy eternal. Yet time has ravaged his works, leaving only a ruin as a testament to his hubris. The poem also plays with perspective. The traveler narrates, describing the statue's sneer of cold command. But did Ozymandias ever truly possess such power? Perhaps even as he ruled, the sands of time were eroding his grip. Shelley, a romantic poet, celebrates nature's indifference to human ambition. The desert, vast and boundless, outlasts any empire. The poem becomes a warning that even the mightiest will eventually fall. So my friends, what kind of legacy do we want to leave? Is it in monuments or achievements or something deeper? Kindness, compassion, a better world. Ozymandias challenges us to ponder what truly endures beyond our own fleeting lives. Now, of course, I know that you will need to read this poem again. By all means, just listen again to it, read it again, because it's very important to ponder on these words and the thoughts I shared with you, and maybe you can share what you think with me. I'd love to hear from you and start a discussion about this poem, one of my favorite poems of all time. But that's not the end of our episode. The next segment is, actually, because it's our spotlight, and as usual, we finish with our spotlight segment. So don't go anywhere, we're going to talk about fitting in, unpacking the power of social norms. That's coming next, I'll be right back. Have you ever found yourself doing something just because everyone else was doing it? Maybe it's a fashion trend you don't love, a popular opinion you don't quite agree with. Why do we have this urge to follow the crowd? Are we just sheep? Or is there more to it? Well, today we're shining our spotlight on conformity and social norms. Welcome to our spotlight, where we dig into fascinating ideas and the unseen forces that shape our behavior. Today we're asking, what's the deal with conformity? Is it a glitch in the human operating system, or is there a reason we're so wired for fitting in? Let's explore. Now, social norms, my friends, are the unwritten rules of a group. What's considered acceptable behavior, how to dress, how to speak. These norms give us structure and predictability. Imagine a world without social norms. Chaos, right? But there's a dark side. Conformity can stifle individuality. Why do we conform? Well, for starters, we want to be liked. Humans are pack animals. From our caveman days, being accepted by the tribe meant survival. Even today, that primal instinct lingers. Another reason, we look to others to figure out what's right. If everyone's doing it, it must be the correct way, right? Well, this is social proof in action. Think about restaurants. You're more likely to pick the crowded one, assuming the popularity must mean it's good. Now, of course, there are pioneers and rebels who buck the trend, but even they are influenced by social norms, just in the opposite direction. So here's my question, here's my thought-provoking question for you before we call it a day. Where's the line between healthy social cooperation and blind conformity? When is following the crowd beneficial, and when does it hold us back? Well, something to ponder as you go about your day. And with that, my friends, I would like to thank you very much for listening to another episode from English Plus Podcast, to another digest from English Plus Podcast. And I would like to remind you that there are other premium episodes that you're probably listening to the first part, to the preview of, but you can't listen to the rest of it. Well, there's a remedy for that. Become a premium member on Patreon and you will be able to listen to all of the premium content. Or if you want an easy listening experience, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and you will be able to listen to all of the premium episodes. With that being said, I would like to thank you very much again for listening to today's episode. And again, I'm grateful that you're still here, you're still listening to the episode till the end, and that really makes me happy. And maybe that is a reminder for you to think about practicing gratitude. Just do it, and you will find that it will make you a lot happier. It will actually make your day. Well, thank you very much. This is Danny, your host, signing off. I will see you next time.